If you're looking to boost your communication skills, build better habits, and connect with people on a different level, then the podcast is for you. It's a place where connection and communication meet coaching. I'm your host, Podge, a seasoned expert in health, leadership, and psychology. Each week, we'll dive into topics related to health with a keen focus on the art of building meaningful relationships through insightful interviews and practical advice. I believe that everyone has a great story to tell, and by learning from each other, we can not only enhance our own lives, but also strengthen our communities and how we connect with others. So I invite you to join me on this journey of connection and growth. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to podcast episode 13, Improv Your Health with Barry Wright.
What other people are doing and the changes that brought to how I approach people management and team leadership in various roles has been really transformative. I think I've become a much better and empathetic listener. I think that has helped me understand everything from how to ask better questions in one-on-one meetings to help really get to what might be on people's minds, to being able to be in a room of 20 people and notice that someone's leaning forward. They usually don't talk very much, but they clearly want to say something, and then taking that opportunity to call on them, even if they maybe wouldn't have spoken up. And that observation and that kind of outward focus on other people, I think so important when working in teams, because everyone has different approaches, everyone has different working styles, and if you can adapt your behavior to get the most out of everyone, that's just good for the whole group.
Barry, was this something you realized I should do? So what we're speaking about really is, and there's so many coaching concepts again, but a lot of like the emotional intelligence side is what you feel that you've maybe gained or worked on when doing improv. Was this something you said, were you aware saying, oh, I'm needing to improve in this area? Or was it a case of when you did the improv, you're like, oh shit, I can, like, this is really enhancing other aspects of my life?
It was a little bit of both. Like, there were certainly aspects in particular of people management and team leadership that I had read in a book or read a framework, and I knew that, deeply understanding people's motivations was important, or that monitoring the kind of tone of a group of people could help you uncover opportunities or get to problems faster. But I'll be honest, I'd never really gotten training or practice in how to mechanically do those things, right? I knew emotional intelligence was important. I knew these various aspects of management were important. And I had just been going along kind of saying, well, I'll try harder to do that. And improv gave me a place to actually practice those skills. And, in an improv class, you get, often 30 to 40 chances in a couple of hours to specifically work on those things. And so I definitely found that there was a virtuous cycle where I could practice these things in an environment that wasn't full of all the context of work, which I think makes it harder to learn those emotional skills. And then I was able to recognize, the improvement as I was going along. So it's a bit of both.
I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. I am a serial gatherer of knowledge and a slow person to apply that knowledge. And what I'm saying is I would have read like multiple books, like books on leadership are kind of like my go-tos. But for the longest time, I would just be reading and not applying. And I feel I've switched, like even doing this is daunting for me, but I know that it will help me grow in the long run too. But I just really appreciate how you had that awareness, and then you had the awareness to put yourself in a playful environment, kind of like a low stakes environment, right? Where there was like we spoke to earlier, the environment was good. There was no fear of failure. You were encouraged. And that really was like an unbelievable learning like ground for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and first of all, I think good on you and anybody recognizing that challenge. It took me years to figure it out myself. And, I think we should also give ourselves some grace. Like, it's comparatively easier to write a framework and share that with somebody than to spend hours with them practicing it, right? It's just the laws of physics and time make it harder to get access to practical repetitions of these skills. And so it's natural that we start by reading. There was something else that you just said that made me want to comment, but I've lost it now. So I'll come back to it if it arises. But I think that's a natural way for skill progression to happen for everyone.
Yeah, I appreciate you validating me there. And definitely, if that question or that idea does come back into your mind, feel free to just go ahead and share it. I'm curious around a lot of what it seems like with improv is about kind of being adaptable and creative. I'm curious, like, how do you apply these principles into your daily life or your work?
Yeah, I think there's a toolbox and then there's a mindset. And so and sometimes those come at different times for people. The mindset, I kind of point to expansive thinking. We have a phrase we use in our improv classes, that is this concept of listen, agree, and then add. And this idea of always being open to what other people are saying, which is the listening part. And then the agree part is the tricky one, where we don't necessarily mean you have to agree with what somebody else is saying. You just have to agree that that's what they said. And that basically means, if we're doing an improv scene and you say we're in the kitchen, I don't get to say, no, we're actually in space, right? We agree on the reality we're talking about. And in the workplace, that's just kind of about agreeing on the problem we're solving or agreeing on the situation that we're in, agreeing that what somebody has shared with you is their honest perspective. And then from there, adding your own input. And sometimes just doing those things is enough to get 2 or 10 people on the same page and working together. The toolbox part is, there are tons of games and skills from improv that can help us, in particular, access creativity and adaptability. One of the things we struggle with in a lot of workplaces is, this concept of, well, that's the way we've always done it. Kind of having these internal assumptions about how things should work. And there are a lot of improv kind of micro skills that can be applied to get you out of those assumptions or get you into a more creative mindset than otherwise naturally would happen.
That last point strikes a chord, but both points strike a chord, but I just want to start around the creativity. How do you, while you're working, because you said you can kind of observe people's like body language cues, or you're just making sure like you're actively listening to people. When you are in a creative environment and maybe, let's say, someone is challenging the status quo of this is how we've always done it, how do you seek to get the best kind of information out of people? Because, if you're in a room of maybe 10, there might always be maybe one or two who are more outspoken. And I guess, like, historically, those people would be the people who'd be more heard. But like, given your self-awareness, I'm curious how you manage to extract ideas from maybe the rest of the group, whether they're more introverted or just communicate in different styles.
Yeah. So there are a lot of ways to go about it. One thing I like to do is to think intentionally about the structure of meetings and conversations. So in less applicable to my current role in Noom, because I'm not running like product and engineering teams, but one thing. Yeah, he is one of the most positively energetic people I've ever met. He's one of those people where you get in a room with him and you feel like you're the only person in his world for that period of time. And it's so genuine, and the depth of care that he has for the work that we do, and the importance of healthcare and wellness for all is super inspirational. It's a big reason why I took the job, actually.
Yeah, I can definitely, if you were in maybe a meeting with him at any point, I could definitely see you coming out of there inspired.
Yeah, and people have written, and he's spoken about his love for heavy metal, and that kind of all out energy comes across. I remember even when we were interviewing, just kind of seeing him come on screen with a 10 out of 10 energy when we did a video call. Yeah, you can't fake that. Yeah, and I do like performance and acting stuff, and I know you can't fake it.
Yeah, you could tell if he was putting it on or not. It's very, very natural.
Yeah.
Is it too simplistic to say the phrase, like, not that you're his right-hand man, but you just support him in like all aspects of his work as well, and you like pair together as a team almost?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. And that's generally how the chief of staff role works at many companies. And it's always a little bit of a different flavor depending on the company and the executive that you're supporting. But the goal is to provide 10x output for an executive by having somebody who can work with them really closely, can understand how they think and act, and be in rooms they can't be because they've got so much on their plate, as well as make sure that the rest of the organization is very, very well connected to their activities. And so I think of myself as a force multiplier for somebody who's already got quite a lot of force.
That does require a massive skill set, which I would love to dive in later on in the podcast. But first, I'm curious, other than Seju being the inspiration that he is, what else drew you to Noom?
Yeah, I think I've been on a trajectory of trying to be in roles and at companies that have a more direct positive impact on the world. I spent about a decade in video ad tech startups, which was like endlessly and deeply fascinating technical work, but it was not as inspiring to help advertisers and publishers make a little bit more money on their ads as it was to move into the consumer space when I worked at Spotify on content moderation and trust and safety problems. And now, you know, what problem is more important than human health? It's really hard. It's a short list of things that have that type of an impact on the world. And, you know, finding a company like Noom that's not only working on, you know, this crucial problem that affects literally every person on the planet, but is doing so with creativity, integrity, earnest support, and, you know, just they do this important work in the right way. And that came through all throughout my kind of extensive interview process, as well as, you know, what I've experienced in talking to people after taking the role. I've never gotten more messages after changing my job on LinkedIn than when I switched over to Noom.
Yeah, it seems like it's a really, I guess, a friendly environment, but also a driven environment. Like, our mission, as I mentioned in the introduction, we want to help people everywhere live healthy, better lives as well. So in terms of like a mission, it is pretty powerful. Like, I would say everybody on this call is here because they want to improve like some aspect of their health.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we all go through different stages with that. And I think that's one of the most exciting things as well, is, you know, the approach of behavior change in particular is so long lasting. It's so deeply impactful. And, you know, there are other very important things in the health and wellness space that are maybe a little bit more narrow and targeted than the broad, you know, kind of life changing work that can happen with Noom.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious to know, is there anything else you feel we should know about your life at Noom?
I guess a couple things come to mind. One is, you know, so I work remotely in Baltimore, and I'm very glad that companies like Noom support a remote working environment. It's allowed me to do things that I would otherwise not have been able to do, and that's very much appreciated. I think we do a really good job of it here. I'm maybe most well known at Noom for my background in video calls, which is a stained glass window in a church here in Baltimore. And so if you ever see a picture of me, it might be there. And I've always tried to make a good impression. And you know, I definitely got an assist from the co-working space I work out of.
Sorry, go ahead.
I would just say, like, I'm an open book. So if you have questions about what I do, if you're a new employee listening to this, reach out. I'm always happy to talk.
Yeah, and I was giggling earlier when you said about the church, because that was exactly me. So when I zoomed with Barry yesterday, he is literally kind of like upstairs in a church, and there's like a beautiful window behind him. And I'm sure it was the first question I asked. And I said, I'm sure it's the first question everyone probably asks when they get on a video call with you. Very striking.
Exactly. It's an inspiring place.
I can only imagine. Yeah, it must be. And it's nice. I know you mentioned about the remote work has kind of liberated in you a sense and allowed you to do things you otherwise couldn't. Like, what would some of those things be?
Well, I mean, I'm really tied to Baltimore. I have, you know, family here. We'll talk about kind of the improv world and the roots I've put down here. And so, you know, Baltimore is an amazing tech hub, but it's kind of narrowly focused in a few areas. And so, you know, being able to work at companies like Noom, who have embraced remote work, allows me to live where I want and do the work that I feel most passionate about. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have my last two jobs be with companies, who have taken that mindset and haven't necessarily reverted back to, a full scale return to office that has some limitations for people.
Yeah. Because we're kind of in the middle ground there. I know there's a lot of companies are issuing mandates, like for, I think it's a 3-day work week, they're saying.
Yeah. A lot of places are doing that. And, you know, I think there's a lot of companies that are using a kind of a broad tool set when a more targeted approach, you know, somewhat similar to healthcare, would be more effective. And I'm excited to see that people are learning and being flexible and getting the most out of this combination of the really important, you know, benefits of meeting in person. I travel to New York, you know, several times a month to meet with folks and be in person with the team. Thank you, Amtrak, and thank you to infrastructure in the Northeast. But, you know, there are many people here who don't need that. And there are many people who need to be traveling all the time. And, you know, I'm glad to see that we've thought carefully about how to get the most out of work and life for people.
Yeah, there's two points there. I guess the first I want to speak to is I definitely share your passion for community. I'm sure people who've listened to previous podcasts know that I'm really big on community connection and the power of like teams and team building. The second point is I really liked what you said about the healthcare. Well, the working from home is, you're saying they're like putting people under the same umbrella, whereas it's really an individual thing, and the same with healthcare. And I'd like to think that's one thing as a coach that I like to try and do at Noom, is that you understand that everyone is totally different and unique and has different needs too. And it is important to address needs individually versus like on a wide scale basis might not support everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that I admire most in people and company is what I describe as expansive thinking, where if somebody doesn't fit the outline or the structure for something, my first reaction is that's an opportunity, not that's a problem I have to solve, or that's an exclusion I need to make, because, you know, there's so many different things that people are great at, and yeah, our starting point is figuring those out and getting the most out of them. You know, I think that's a better outcome for everyone.
Yeah, I saw you got it. I would be like hitting that clap emoji if I had one, but there's unfortunately not one on my end when I'm hosting. But I really love that, and I share a similar approach. This is actually my favorite thing about Noom, is that every person at Noom has a unique story and has like something of value to add. But it's kind of your role, depending if you're a leader. Maybe you don't even have to be a leader. It's kind of just your role to like support that person to help bring that out, because everyone I think has something that they can contribute, and they have some sort of like unique power in them too.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you phrased it that way, because I really believe that every person has the opportunity to lead, no matter whether they're in a management role or not, right? I think leadership and management is very distinct disciplines with different skills, and it's really important to empower people to lead. And that can be in a hallway conversation, that could be in an all hands meeting, you know, that there's all different aspects of leadership that we have access to every day.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of, is it Simon Sinek's quote, like leadership is not a rank or something like that. I don't think he said it's a responsibility, but it's more a responsibility than like a job title.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Just at this point, Barry, I'm going to take a pause because we have shot up in numbers. And then after that, I would love to dive into your improv. However, before I do, I just want to welcome those who have just recently joined. This is the podcast episode 13, Improv Your Health with Barry Wright. So far, we have talked very briefly on Barry's extensive background and his passion for joining Noom and being able to support Noom's mission to help people everywhere live healthier, better lives. Just a brief reminder that this podcast is brought to you on Noom Vibe, which is, of course, our new free wellness community app from Noom. So at the Noom Vibe community, we're all on a shared mission, as I just said, to live healthier, better, longer lives. Noom Vibe is the app that actually pays you to be healthier. And you've probably seen, if you've navigated through it, there is a step counter you can use. You can even tailor it to your own health. You can add in stretching, exercises, a water goal to all help you get some Noom coins, which can be used for your own monetary gain or vouchers. You can also use it to donate to our various charities on the platform as well. So thank you all again for joining. And just a reminder, we're here with Barry Wright. And Barry, I know you have like a massive passion for improv, and I love how improv like has helped to improve kind of your own life as well. I don't even know where to dive in, but let's just have a talk about where you discovered your love for improv or how that came about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very fortunate in that. So my wife Kristen has improvised for, you know, 9, almost 10 years. And when we moved to Baltimore, I grew up in Baltimore, but I was living in Charleston, South Carolina when Kristen and I met. And we moved back to Baltimore for a job. And she got into improv just to meet new people in a new city. And she fell in love with it. And her friends spent a full 2 years convincing me to try it.
Wow.
No, that's not something that I could ever do. I'll tell the brief story of why I avoided performance for many years. In middle school, in seventh grade, I auditioned for the play, the one and only time. And I didn't know what stage directions were. And so there was a line in the script that I was supposed to read where my character was supposed to say it was a slip of the tongue. And I thought that was a stage direction. So I just stood there with my tongue out of my mouth, waiting for the other person to start speaking. For like too long, but the teacher really let me have it, and so I didn't go back to you know, any kind of performing arts for some time. But I really was in a place in my life. This was 2017, and I've been working in startups, you know, for the last 5 years, kind of really heads down, to the point where I would self-assess myself as being a workaholic, and doing like 80-hour weeks, and not because I was being made to. And so I really kind of hit this point where I decided I needed the accountability of somebody else to get myself out of the office, kind of break that habit and that cycle. And so I finally signed up for an improv class. So I had to be somewhere Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. And I immediately fell in love with it. I think the thing that really opened my mind was, you know, I've worked in tech and product roles my whole career, my degrees in math. I spent, you know, 20, you know, 5 odd years in environments where everything was geared towards a correct answer and only one correct answer. And in that first improv class, it gave me access to a world in which there were an infinite number of correct answers. And no matter what you said, the rest of the group was going to support you in discovering what that meant. And so it was a really good contrast to my day job. And I, you know, I fell in love with it. I started taking every class I could. And, you know, a couple of years later, suddenly I'm doing improv 4 or 5 nights a week and volunteering at the theater. And we can go from there.
Wow, the psychologist is going to come out in me here, but I'd love to unpack a few things. The first thing that stood out to me was when you mentioned you were in school and you were auditioning for the play. That was hilarious, by the way, with the tongue.
Looking back now, it is.
I was like picturing it in my head, and I could just sense the atmosphere and you kind of going like, "What's happening?" Mm-hmm. But one thing stood out to me is you said the teacher kind of let you have it. I'm just curious if that reaction, you know, kind of closed you off to those type of environments? Like, is that why you think you were so resistant for 2 years when your wife was saying, let's do some improv?
I think that is a part of it. And I think, I don't want to be too strong with my words, but I think it's kind of a sacred thing to be a teacher. And I'm sure looking, if I had a videotape of that day, it probably wasn't as long as I remember. But the, the support we give people when teaching is so important. And, I think that moment stuck with me for a long time, and whether I knew it or not, it was definitely holding me back from trying some things I might have otherwise enjoyed.
Yeah, and I mean, that might have held you back, but it's really great how your wife seemed like your number one fan, and she knew that it was something that you could benefit from. So fair play to her for being persistent.
That's right. She knows me better than I know myself a lot.
That's good. That is good. The second thing about that is we actually had Taylor Munson, who's also another Noom employee. If you haven't heard that podcast, I'd recommend you can go back, like click on my name and just go to the episode before this. But she mentioned about trying to stay on track and consistent, that she would often give herself an overarching goal, which at the moment is she's training to run a marathon. And I think that's kind of what you did, right? When you said every Tuesday, like you understood yourself, like I work a lot and I will not get away from my church wherever you were working at the time, unless you like purposely schedule in time that you have to commit to.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it wasn't even, I had tried other things before. I had tried, adding, different exercise habits. Yeah, I love bowling. I was captain of my high school bowling team. And I thought about, I ought to start going bowling every week. But it was that added part of there are 10 other people in this class who will be disappointed if I'm not there, that made it hard to skip. And I even, started restructuring my days to make sure there was no excuse I'd have for not leaving it at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I think that's a very clever strategy. I'd love for you to let the audience know, like, what does an improv class entail? Because I presume, like me, many would be thinking of that first scenario when you were young. Like, I'm just picturing me on a stage making a complete idiot out of myself and people pointing and laughing at me, like that's kind of like the anxiety that I had when I was thinking about it. But from what you're describing, it seems like a more collaborative and supportive environment.
Absolutely. And I think I'll describe it in a few ways. I think the mental picture people have of improv is four people on stage in a straight line looking out an audience. And the image I wish they had is 12 people standing in a circle looking at each other. Because it is exactly what you described, improv is about creating a psychologically unsafe environment to create things together. And I kind of, every word in that sentence means something in that we teach people in improv to make each other look like geniuses. We teach people to support their scene partners, the other people in the class, before they support themselves. And we teach people, that every opportunity is a gift that you're giving to somebody else. So it's really focused on this language of team and support and cooperation. And 30 minutes into your first improv experience, I teach, these kind of first time classes, very frequently now, and you see people's body language shift. You see people's, facial expression shift when they realize that nothing they do is going to be rejected, at least in this space for a couple of hours. And it's amazing what that does to your mindset. And you see people access creativity or access comfort that they otherwise normally wouldn't. And certainly improv can be used to teach kind of deep and impressive and hilarious performance skills. But I think it's even more impactful for reminding people that human collaboration, human communities can exist even among strangers with just a little bit of intention and effort.
I don't know. Am I just weird? Or please, leave emojis in the chat, folks, if you can resonate with this. But Barry, as you were describing what improv actually is, I was almost like, I could see myself actually coming down off the stage and being in line with those 10 other people. And I'm not even joking. I actually relaxed back on my seat and I like my face kind of was clenched at the start and then it started relaxing. And at that point, you actually said your body language relaxes, you know, and I thought you described that so perfectly. So it sounds like it's an environment very safe and very conducive to like mistakes are welcomed almost. And you know, you're not going to be criticized by the group that you're with as well, which is an amazing actually environment to be in, to learn.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the things we do in our intro classes at Highwire Improv, which I can talk about all the fun of a nonprofit organization later, but we play games that are designed in such a way that everyone loses. And the reason we do that, there's actually a game called Loser Ball, where you stand in a circle, you toss an imaginary ball to each other. And the only rule is you're not allowed to catch the ball. And then when you fail to catch the ball, the whole circle claps and cheers for you as if you've done the most amazing sports maneuver in history, right? Because we're so conditioned in life to expect correctness, to expect perfection, and to reward that. And we don't have to be that way. And right. And it's just this, it's this very visceral kind of shift for people to say, oh, actually it's okay to fail. And it's actually more fun and often funnier when I don't quite succeed than when I do everything kind of by the book. And it's just not a way of thinking that people are exposed to generally.
Barry, I do just, and I hope this person doesn't mind me calling them out now, but Coach Marnie, by the way, if you don't know the functionality of Noom Vibe, folks, you can shoot myself or Barry kind of DMs as well. There's not really a specific chat feature for this podcast, but there is a DM feature. And Coach Marnie made a fantastic point, Barry, that what you're talking about sounds so like our coaching. So mm-hmm. it's almost the same skill set that we use and we use it to help people to trust themselves as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that resonates so deeply with me. There's not a lot of benefit by being too rigid or too mean to people. We need to meet people where they are. And like I said earlier, there's an opportunity to be expansive in our thinking when people make, with air quotes, mistakes. We say in improv that mistakes are gifts because they open up either learning opportunities or take us in directions that the kind of book answers wouldn't otherwise take us. And that's often where the best stuff lies.
Yeah, you've taken me back without getting into obviously any detail because it's work related, but I know we mentioned Seju at the very beginning, like the co-founder of Noom. And always one thing sticks out to me when I was having a conversation about with him, and he was just talking about improvements and as a company, like sometimes like stuff happens and you have to learn and mistakes are made. But I really liked what he said. It's like, we need to improve that. It's like, we're improved the process. This is not like a fault of a single person. This is like an issue that we have to work together on to tackle and improve. And I just thought that was so disarming because that didn't feel like anyone was under pressure. It kind of put the pressure on the problem solving, which was good. So now you were like attacking a problem versus maybe perhaps attacking a person or like your own kind of self-worth or self-esteem.
Absolutely. And we hear that approach of reorienting ourselves to face the problem together in so many domains. That comes up in couples counseling, that comes up in mediation, that comes up in coaching, that comes up in work environments, because what benefit do we get from arguing with one another, right? So, if our attention is not directed together towards a problem, we're not going to solve that problem nearly as effectively. This may be an esoteric reference for some of the audience, but there's a movie called The Mighty Ducks, which is about a youth hockey team, and they demonstrate this perfectly. They have everyone's kind of skating around all at once, and they're running into each other, and they're not, scoring any goals. And then the coach puts like duct tape around them, and they all have to be in a mob skating together. And the lesson, of course, is we have to skate in the same direction to achieve our goals. And it's surprisingly easy to fall out of that mindset. And so, you know, I think improv principles and coaching principles and work principles all, you know, kind of direct us back towards, we're all in this together. We're all on the same team. We're all trying to save, you know, solve the same problem together.
Your Mighty Ducks example reminded me, I played soccer at, when I was 13, there was like a big soccer competition in Ireland when you're that age. But one of the first training sessions, the coach gave us like string, and we all had to hold the string while we were playing. So like we're all, it's similar to that concept. We're all moving in unison and as a team versus the kind of scattered Mighty Ducks kind of form. Is that where the flying V comes from? Isn't that the Mighty Ducks? That's brilliant. I haven't watched that movie, I'd say, since I was a small child. Let's check it out again. Barry, I do just want to, if it's okay with you, just take another brief pause, because we have shot up in numbers yet again, which is absolutely fantastic. Just folks, by the way, if you like what you're hearing from myself and Barry, like right underneath our names, you can see the follow buttons. Feel free to click the follow button. And then regarding the podcast that we do, if there's any particular material that you'd like to hear, you can always send me a DM, and I'm happy to hear your thoughts and ideas on what will be most impactful for you all. As I said, we have shot up in numbers, so I do just want to welcome you here again. We're talking to Barry Wright, who is the Chief of Staff and the Director of Corporate Development here at Noom. That's a lot of words. I really encourage you to go back after this and re-listen to the talk, because Barry does dive into a lot of fascinating aspects of his work. And recently we've just been talking about improv and Barry's own kind of improv business that he has, Highwire Improv. And next we will begin to speak to how Barry uses improv to integrate into his everyday life and his health and wellness too. But before we do, I just want to add that this conversation is brought to you by Noom Vibe, which of course is our free wellness community app from Noom. So at the Noom Vibe community, we're all on a shared mission to live better, longer, healthier lives. Noom Vibe is the app that actually pays you to live better. So as mentioned before, we have a lot of features. You have the step counter, you can add a water tracker, an exercise tracker, a stretching tracker, to all help you build up extra rewards that you can use for vouchers, or we have a lot of wonderful charities and donations that you can make as well. All right, back to the conversation. And Barry, I do want to ask you around improv, like how has it influenced your approach to work and life in general?
Yeah, so a few things come to mind. So, you know, as we've been talking about, improv helps bring our focus out from the self into what other people are doing. And you know, the changes that brought to how I approach people management and team leadership in various roles has been really transformative. I think I've become much better an empathetic listener. You know, I think that has helped me understand everything from how to ask better questions in one-on-one meetings to help really get to what might be on people's minds, to being able to be in a room of 20 people and notice that someone's leaning forward. They usually don't talk very much, but they clearly want to say something, and then taking that opportunity to call on them, even if they maybe wouldn't have spoken up. And that observation and that kind of outward focus on other people, I think so important when working in teams, because everyone has different approaches, everyone has different working styles, and if you can adapt your behavior to get the most out of everyone, that's just good for the whole group.
Barry, was this something you realized I should do? So what we're speaking about really is, and there's so many coaching concepts again, but a lot of like the emotional intelligence side is what you feel that you've maybe gained or worked on when doing improv. Was this something you said, were you aware saying, oh, I'm needing to improve in this area? Or was it a case of when you did the improv, you were like, oh shit, I can, like, this is really enhancing other aspects of my life?
It was a little bit of both. Like there were certainly aspects in particular of people management and team leadership that I had read in a book or read a framework, and I knew that, you know, deeply understanding people's motivations was important, or that monitoring the kind of tone of a group of people could help you uncover opportunities or you know, get to problems faster. But I'll be honest, I'd never really gotten training or practice in how to mechanically do those things, right? I knew emotional intelligence was important. I knew these various aspects of management were important. And I had just been going along kind of saying, well, I'll try harder to do that. And improv gave me a place to actually practice those skills. And, in an improv class, you get, often 30 to 40 chances in a couple of hours to specifically work on those things. And so I definitely found that there was a virtuous cycle where I could practice these things in an environment that wasn't full of all the context of work, which I think makes it harder to learn those emotional skills. And then I was able to recognize, the improvement as I was going along. So it's a bit of both.
I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. I am a serial gatherer of knowledge and a slow person to apply that knowledge. And what I'm saying is I would have read like multiple books, like books on leadership are kind of like my go-tos. But for the longest time, I would just be reading and not applying. And I feel I've switched, like even doing this is daunting for me, but I know that it will help me grow in the long run too. But I just really appreciate how you had that awareness, and then you had the awareness to put yourself in a playful environment, kind of like a low stakes environment, right? Where there was like we spoke to earlier, the environment was good. There was no fear of failure. You were encouraged. And that really was like an unbelievable learning like ground for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and first of all, I think good on you and anybody recognizing that challenge. It took me years to figure it out myself. And, I think we should also give ourselves some grace. Like it's comparatively easier to write a framework and share that with somebody than to spend hours with them practicing it, right? It's just the laws of physics and time make it harder to get access to practical repetitions of these skills. And so it's natural that we start by reading. There was something else that you just said that made me want to comment, but I've lost it now. So I'll come back to it if it arises. But I think that's a natural way for skill progression to happen for everyone.
Yeah, I appreciate you validating me there. Definitely, if that question or that idea does come back into your mind, feel free to just go ahead and share it. I'm curious around a lot of what it seems like with improv is about kind of being adaptable and creative. I'm curious, like, how do you apply these principles into your daily life or your work?
Yeah, I think there's a toolbox and then there's a mindset. And so and sometimes those come at different times for people. The mindset, I kind of point to expansive thinking. We have a phrase we use in our improv classes, that is this concept of listen, agree, and then add. And this idea of always being open to what other people are saying, which is the listening part. And then the agree part is the tricky one, where we don't necessarily mean you have to agree with what somebody else is saying. You just have to agree that that's what they said. And that basically means, if we're doing an improv scene and you say we're in the kitchen, I don't get to say, no, we're actually in space, right? We agree on the reality we're talking about. And in the workplace, that's just kind of about agreeing on the problem we're solving or agreeing on the situation that we're in, agreeing that what somebody has shared with you is their honest perspective. And then from there, adding your own input. And sometimes just doing those things is enough to get 2 or 10 people on the same page and working together. The toolbox part is, there are tons of games and skills from improv that can help us, in particular, access creativity and adaptability. One of the things we struggle with in a lot of workplaces is, this concept of, well, that's the way we've always done it. Or kind of having these internal assumptions about how things should work. And there are a lot of improv kind of micro skills that can be applied to get you out of those assumptions or get you into a more creative mindset than otherwise naturally would happen.
That last point strikes a chord, but both points strike a chord, but I just want to start around the creativity. How do you, while you're working, because you said you can kind of observe people's like body language cues, or you're just making sure like you're actively listening to people. When you are in a creative environment and maybe, let's say, someone is challenging the status quo of this is how we've always done it, how do you seek to get the best kind of information out of people? Because, you know, if you're in a room of maybe 10, there might always be maybe one or two who are more outspoken. And I guess like historically, those people would be the people who'd be more heard. But like, given your self-awareness, I'm curious how you manage to extract ideas from maybe the rest of the group, whether they're more introverted or just communicate in different styles.
Yeah. So there are a lot of ways to go about it. One thing I like to do is to think intentionally about the structure of meetings and conversations. So and less applicable to my current role in Noom because I'm not running like product and engineering teams. But you know, one thing we would do in previous jobs is instead of doing a daily stand-up where everyone kind of goes, you know, person one talks about what they're doing, then person two, then person three, we have everyone write those things down and we put them on a screen so that we can see them all at once. And that takes away the opportunity for somebody to jump in and interrupt or to spend five times longer than they should talking about their piece. And then it puts all the information in front of people so they can react to it as a group rather than whoever decides to go first. So there's structural things you can do to level the playing field. So it's not a just who tags in first situation.
Such a great technique. I could even see if those things popped up in the board, I might have one idea. And next thing I might look at maybe your idea and be like, oh, wait, like, I like this one more now. You know, I didn't think about that. And now we can have a discussion, or vice versa. You could be like, I'm not sure about that, and start asking like critical questions to try not to condemn the person, but just try and, again, we're trying to solve the problem, and through the questioning, it might help us kind of come to a better ending.
Absolutely. And another kind of concept and technique I like is using the phrase, if this is true, what else is true? And so when we're saying creative brainstorming environment, people can kind of give the platitude of there are no bad ideas, but you need to give people the structure to actually follow through with that. And so what we'll do is we'll get a first idea on the board, and then we'll assume that that idea is true or correct or good. And then the group has to contribute by saying, well, if that's true, what else would be true? And that can help us uncover assumptions, uncover kind of the logical connections between that idea and other ideas, all while leaving aside the judgment of whether that first initial idea was particularly good or not. It lets us explore the idea before we judge it.
I love how you're putting such small, minute details into things, and it's completely like shifting the way you operate. Even that, like, hey everybody, there's no bad ideas, and next thing you get a bunch of ideas. But changing that to, if this is true, what else is true, it's almost like you're getting people on the same page, and it's almost like it's like one brain thinking versus like 20 brains just throwing stuff at you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And these are subtle small changes, but by putting some guardrails on what problem we're talking about or thinking about, you can really do a lot to prevent, you know, people who are just there to combat ideas, or people who are really excited to share their ideas but would otherwise maybe distract from the conversation we're having. And you know, people often don't even realize that constraint's being put on the conversation.
Barry, do you mind? I think this could be really beneficial for the audience. Can I just digress slightly to at improv, and you can correct me if this is incorrect, but you said you had a three-pronged technique where it was listen, yeah, agree, it was listen, agree, and add, right?
And we use that structure both in improv education. It's kind of a scaffolding of the skills. It's, you know, the first thing we teach people is how to effectively listen to every word that another person is saying and what their body language or their emotion or their posture are doing. We then teach them to agree, which is, again, not necessarily about saying we both have the same point of view, but we're both in the same world. We're both working on the same problem. And then only then do we teach people to add or put new information into a scene or a discussion, because what often happens, especially in difficult problem solving situations or creative situations, people jump all the way to add and they just put their own idea in the pot, and then we have a bunch of disconnected thoughts that don't lead anywhere coherent. And so building it one step at a time helps people take the time they need to contribute effectively, but also practice those underlying skills so that they can add the most useful things.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly powerful. I might butcher this phrase slightly, but you often hear the phrase don't listen. It's listen to understand, don't listen to respond.
That's right.
Yeah, and this seems like a perfect, you're forcing people, you actually have to listen to what this person is saying.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what could be an example? Maybe we could do a brief example for the audience here. I'm trying to think what I should say, though. Does it have to be extensive, or can it be anything?
Let's play an improv game. It demonstrates this exactly the way that you're describing, which is there's a game we play called One Word Story, where you and I are going to tell a short story, but each of us can only say one word. And the reason we do it that way is you can't plan ahead, because we're going one word at a time. And if you don't listen to what I'm saying, then you're going to have no chance of contributing to the next word. And I promise we'll cut it off if it gets scary. does that make sense?
Yeah, my anxiety is increasing, but I'm excited.
the great thing is these stories are never very good. So the bar is low. We're going to have a complete sentence. I'll kick it off, and I think you'll follow the thread. I'll start on once.
There
was
a
coach
who
loved
coaching
so
much
that
they
podcasted
a
lot. Yeah, right. That's you. We just told the story of you.
Oh my God.
Right. You did it. See, and take a deep breath. Yeah. Right. So, I hope you can kind of immediately feel that, there's all of these instincts that are so ingrained in how we interact with the world. Right. There's this desire to, I'm sure you felt it, to get it right. There's this desire to tell an interesting story. There's this desire to not make a mistake. There's this desire to, contribute your idea. And all of those things can get brought to the surface in that 30-second game that we just played. It's one of the reasons I encourage everybody to take an improv class, even if they have no interest in performance, is because it reveals all of these assumptions and biases and approaches we take to everything from our conversation with somebody at a cafe to our workplace. And just seeing those revealed and maybe flipped on their head in a playful and kind of visceral way is... It really changes your mindset. Even if you don't practice it every day for the next 7 years, you will remember that structure and that experience for a while. Also, good job to you by doing your first improv game in front of over 150 people. Most people don't have that experience.
Right. Yeah, you lied to me when you said a circle of 10.
a circle of 170 is even better.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to tell everyone listening to just block their ears for a moment, but I said I wouldn't. one other point I wanted to add is maybe it's just one, my slight bias is coming in saying I'm big on connection or team building, but I did feel a sense of
connection there, and kind of I could imagine that as a really good team building exercise with someone or with a group of people.
Yeah, absolutely. It is very difficult to not focus on the group when you're doing something like that.
Yeah, that's really cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Barry, kind of walking through a real life example. And now I've dipped my toes in improv. I kind of want more.
Thank you for being willing to do it. I know it was a slight surprise, which I tell myself not to surprise people with improv. So, broke my
hey, it's where you learn, I think. So I appreciate it.
That's right.
I know we have around 5 or so minutes left. I'd love for you to leave our audience with a few key takeaways from the conversation in terms of maybe integrating improv into their life, or any other words of wisdom that you might have.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, I would say that these concepts of improv are not just about performance. I mean, I tell people all the time that improv is just when a team comes together with exceptional communication skills and creativity to solve a problem. And you can look all around the world, whether it's, a group of doctors working on a patient, to a team in a boardroom, to your family around the kitchen table. That's life. We improvise all the time. Every conversation we're in, every day we walk through is improvised in some way, even if we have some structure around that. And so, you know how to do this. And I think there's you have years and decades of experience in improvising your own life. And I hope people can take some confidence in that. The second thing I'll say is we can listen to the people around us, but we can also listen to ourselves. And a lot of times, especially with like kind of health and wellness, listening to ourselves is an important place to start. For me, I know, I tend to be streaky, right? I have weeks where I have great habits and I eat well and I exercise a bunch, and I'll have weeks where I don't. And I used to beat myself up for that. And now that I've just kind of listened and kind of understood myself better, I give myself a bit more grace when I'm having a couple of weeks where I'm not behaving in the way that I'd hoped I would, both because I know that's just kind of how I am, and also because I know I can go back to those streaks of more adaptive behaviors. And then the last thing I'll add as a takeaway is, one of the things we say all the time in improv is, there's a quote, to bring a brick, not a cathedral. And in improv, that means, you don't walk into a scene and try and bring the entirety of the scene with you and then hope somebody else enjoys it. You put one brick down and then your partner puts another brick down, and hopefully over a few minutes you build something beautiful together. And I really try and take that mindset into my life, where if I want to achieve a health goal, or running a marathon or lifting a certain amount of weight or whatever it might be, it's much more useful for me to think about what I can do each day towards that than to think I have to get all of these 72 things right over the next 6 months to get what I want. I think improv allows us to step back and be a bit more present in the moment and just focus on what can I do now? What can I do in the short term? What's happening in the environment around me? And how can I make incremental progress towards whatever it is that I want to be working towards, and to be open towards that goal shifting or changing if my surroundings and my situation changes too.
Just to recap for the audience, I think that, if I can paraphrase you, and you can correct me, the three key takeaways were, I think the first one regarding the skill sets or the soft skills, which are really, really difficult skills involved in improv, like they're innately in us. We have them. Like, I guess it's almost like human nature. We've been using these for our whole existence, so they are in there. I think there's a bit of a confidence in that. The second thing was around not just it was around understanding kind of yourself as well.
Yeah. And thinking about, just being, if you want to listen to the world, you have to start with yourself.
Yeah, so super important. And then the final one was the quote about, it's funny you mentioned a cathedral, like bringing a brick, not a cathedral. So just incremental
one step at a time. I took one step at a time. Like when you're focusing on yourself or you have a goal, but also if you're working within a team, don't feel like you have to carry the burden of everything. Like it can be a shared experience as well.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Barry, I know we're coming up on time. I just want to send like a huge kudos and thank you. I'm incredibly grateful. Like the fact that we have access and are able to have a conversation with someone with your expertise and knowledge. And yeah, I really am grateful for that. And I feel we've just tipped the iceberg. That was one of the fastest hours I've ever had in my life. And I'm sure we'll be able to get you back on and dive more into so many like fascinating areas, and you're a subject matter expert in so many of those as well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure. The hour went quickly for me as well. And I am happy to come back anytime if people want to do a deep dive on any of these topics. I love sharing how I feel about these things. And it's made such a big difference in my life that I want to see others have that too.
Awesome. Thank you, Barry. Yeah, I think your passion flew out of that podcast. And yeah, super insightful for me. You've got like millions of clap emojis coming in. So I'm sure it was or the audience found it insightful too. I do just want to wrap up here and just kind of what Barry is saying. If there's any other topics you want us to discuss, please drop me a DM. You can click the follow button under our names if you liked what you've heard. And just to wrap up, yeah, this podcast was brought to you by Noom Vibe, which is, of course, our new free wellness app, community app from Noom. And our mission is really to help people everywhere live healthier, better lives. The Noom Vibe app is an app that actually pays you to live better. So you can earn rewards from our step tracker and building healthy habits like workouts, water, meditation, connecting with loved ones and positive thoughts. You can interact and learn more from loads of our Noom coaches, myself included, and people, Noom employees such as Barry, and continue to enjoy our supportive community and our supportive conversations as well. I'm Coach Podge. Thank you so much for joining podcast episode 13, Improve Your Health with Barry White. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day, and we will chat to you again soon, folks. Thank you. Take care.